accession number 19891, reel 1.
Bill Adams, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born at in Loughton, in Essex.
In where?
Essex.
Which town?
Loughton.
Which year was this?
1916.
Did you grow up in Loughton?
No. Most of my youth I spent in Northumberland.
Whereabouts?
We lived in Newcastle, but my father was an inspector of schools, and he took me about a lot, and I saw the whole county in quite detail.
Did you have any schooling in Northumberland?
No, I went to school at St. Bees in Cumberland. And I was entered for Marlborough, but I went to St. Bees because my father met the headmaster, Edward Bell, who was a brother of a rather famous Bishop of Chichester, George Bell. And he was so struck by him that I went there. And I must admit, though it was a small school, it was a quite marvellous one at that time.
What was so good about the school?
It was the imagination of Edward Bell. He was a very great man, but he died very young.
What did you specialise in at school?
I was on the science side. I won a scholarship to the school, and that was the sort of final straw that made my father send me there. And I shared it with a chap called Ian Michael, who later became a university vice-chancellor, and we've remained friends ever since.
How old were you when you left St. Bees?
I'd be 18, and I went straight to the Royal Military Academy, Woolwich.
Why had you decided to go in for the army?
Well, I came from a completely non-military family, but it was so obvious in 1934 that something was wrong, and it looked as if there was going to be a war. My summing up was, why don't I get in it at the beginning instead of waiting till I'm called up?
Had you taken an interest in politics at that age?
Not very much, but I'd been to Germany with my father, and he'd been at Berlin University as a young man, and I could see the atmosphere.
When did you visit Germany?
Well, I'm guessing here, but I should think in probably 1933, 1935, those sort of years. Hitler was in power, and it was very, very impressive the way Germany was organized. One didn't know about Jews or anything like that, of course, but just the sheer machine which he'd organized was very, very impressive.
Can you give any specific details about your visit to Germany?
I can remember hearing Hitler speak at I think it was Hesse, he'd been billed to speak, and it was in the square of the town, surrounded by trees. And I can remember troops marching on with flaming torches. It was in the evening, and a tremendous crowd assembled in the square, and we were completely surrounded by troops with these torches. And I could understand a little German. I'd studied German at school, and I was with it for about 15 minutes but he must have spoken for 2 hours, and there was nothing more than I wanted to do but to get away, but couldn't because of the fact that we were hemmed in completely by a very thick crowd.
What impression did Hitler make on you?
I couldn't understand enough of it. He certainly knew how to speak to the audience he had.
Did any Germans speak to you about England or the political situation?
Everyone seemed very friendly. I can't remember at the time, but we had a most enjoyable time, actually. But one was terribly impressed by the army. It made a great impression on me.
What was so impressive about them?
How sort of well organized it was. When I'd been to OTC camps, everything was short of equipment, and there weren't enough people. Whereas in Germany, everything seemed to flow.
Did you get the impression that Germany was a threat to England?
Yes, very much, and it must have had an impression on me because basically that is why I joined the army.
Can you tell me about your experiences at Woolwich, please?
I didn't enjoy Woolwich, to be quite frank. I was the only person who came from my school, and I can remember sitting down at a table in hall the very first night, and it wasn't until some time later that I realised that I'd sat down amongst 20 or 30 old Wellingtonians who all knew each other. But I gradually got to like it when I got into the system.
So it was because you felt somewhat isolated?
I think I felt a bit isolated my first term. Northern schools at that time didn't send people into the army on the whole, and everyone seemed to come from Wellington or Cheltenham, I was the odd man out, but I made some very good friends.
Anybody in particular you remember?
Well, I can remember John Anderson in the Signals. I shared a room with him. And he later became signal officer in chief. He was a very good friend. And my other two friends both became sappers. John Constant, who's still alive, a very unusual man, had been at Wellington. And John Carter, who I got to know very well later because I teamed up with him at Cambridge, and he managed to get a first. I only got a second, but he was quite the cleverest man I've ever met in my life.
What did you think of the course at Woolwich?
I'm sorry,
the course at Woolwich.
Oh, very poor. We spent 70% of our time, I believe, learning to ride, and of course it was absolutely useless. Except as possibly a character-building exercise. But there was one instructor called Boswell who did current affairs, and he was very much above average. And the maths was was of a very high standard and very good. But we spent much too much time on riding and PT and things like that. And strange to say, I never shot a rifle or a pistol the whole time I was there. The whole course was antiquated.
How long was the course?
18 months.
And then, after Woolwich?
After Woolwich, I went to Chatham, which is the headquarters of the Royal Engineers, to the School of Military Engineering. And that was a 3-year course of training, but it included 2 years at Cambridge. Cambridge accepted the maths we'd done at Woolwich as equivalent to first year, and so we only had to do 2 years at Cambridge. and we didn't get any vacations. We went back to Chatham during those.
And you were at Trinity Hall at Cambridge?
I was at Trinity Hall. I was very angry about that because my father, being an academic, pulled strings behind me, and I found I was detailed for Trinity Hall. But he was quite right. It was far the best college in Cambridge at the time.
In what sense was it the best college?
It was small. The tutor had SAFA connections, that both tutors had. And the master was a very live character. And the whole character of the college was very friendly, very forward-looking. And I've kept up my connections with the Hall ever since. I look upon it as a better, much better education than I had at school.
Why was it a much better education?
The system was good. The lectures in the engineering faculty were very poor. Don, who was taking it, who was giving the lecture, wrote it up on the blackboard, and we copied it down into our notes, which is word for word, and it really was the most antiquated system I've ever seen. But we had a weekly tutorial, and the tutors were marvellous, and they got us interested in the subject, and I've never ever had such good teaching.
You only had one lecturer?
No. The course was organised so that there were lectures from 9 to 11 in the morning, and that was 5 days a week. And then after 11, we either did drawing or laboratory work or something like that till 1 o'clock. And then in the afternoon, we played games. And then in the evening, we prepared for these tutorials. We worked very hard, actually.
Were you integrated with the other undergraduates?
Oh, very much so. I made some marvellous friends. Trinity Hall was a legal college. Sort of most people who went there studied law. And as a result, I know high court judges, barristers, and they had marvellous minds. And it was an absolute joy being friendly with them.
What about Chatham? What can you tell me about that, please?
Chatham was very good. It was a very thorough course, and things like fieldworks and construction we did in great detail, and it proved very useful. But there was one instructor there who was an infantry man. He was King Sol. His name was King Salter, and he was in the rifle brigade. And he taught us tactics, and he'd been watching what was going on in Germany, and he really taught us what tanks were likely to do. He was a man of the finest imagination I've seen, and we very much studied sort of what a tank division would be like. There was no such thing in the British Army, but he made us do exercises. We took our own cars and roamed over Kent doing tank divisional exercises. He was a marvellous man. I believe he became a military attaché in Oslo, and he helped the king escape when the Germans invaded and got taken prisoner himself as a result. So he spent the war as a prisoner. And when he came out at the end of the war, his mind had changed, and he went into the church and became vicar of Oldham. He should have been CIGS. He was the most marvellous man.
What specifically did he say about tanks that you remember?
Very difficult to remember now, but I can remember an exercise where each officer, there were 18 of us in my particular batch, and we combined with another batch, so there were 30 of us, and each car represented a section of tanks. and we roamed about Kent doing exercises as if we were a tank brigades and tank battalions. And it taught me a tremendous amount. It was a great shock to get out to India and find we were still horsed.
So when did you finish at Chatham and Trinity Hall?
Well, I finished at Trinity Hall in 1938, and I was very lucky. I'd made some very good friends there, and I went straight on an Arctic expedition. The army gave me leave to do it, and I went to Spitsbergen on a scientific expedition, and it was absolutely marvellous. I went as a surveyor, and when I came back, it was just at the time of Munich in 1938, and when Munich was over, I thought rashly that there wouldn't be a war after all. This was only a momentary illusion, but it was when they were collecting places where we were going to be posted. And I'd learnt Persian at Cambridge as a hobby with John Carter, the chap who got her first. And I decided I'd like to go to India. So I put my name down for India. And by the time the posting order came through, I realised that I'd put myself into a backwater. But I'm glad I did it, because India was such a marvellous experience.
Who went with you to Spitsbergen?
There were six of us altogether. They were mostly from the geography part of the university. The leader was a chap called Hugh McCabe, and he went out as a surveyor in Hong Kong and was killed in the Japanese attack. Two others became professors of geography. Nigel Bolchin, I think, became a vice president of the World Geographical Society. Norman Pye became professor of geography at Leicester. That's three I've mentioned, isn't it? Oh, Harland became head of the Scott Polar Research Institute at Cambridge. That's four. And the fifth one, Pritchard, became a doctor. So he didn't do any more of that sort of work.
So what was the object of the expedition?
It was studying the movement of glaciers. And we had our base camp at the bottom of a glacier. And there were all sorts of little, minor little glaciers all around us. And we went up and took sort of scientific measurements. It was tremendous fun, actually.
Now, can you tell me about going to India, please?
Well, I'd volunteered to go to India, and I had a cousin who was a doctor general in India, and when he heard I was going to India, he invited me to lunch at his club in London. And said, "What did I want to do?" And I said, "I want to go to the Bombay Sappers." And so he said, "I'll fix that with the engineer in chief and when I go back to Delhi." And when I arrived in India in January '39, I found a posting order to go to the Bengal Sappers. And I was quite sort of angry about it at the time, but it was absolutely the right decision. I'm terribly proud now of having been a Bengal sapper.
Why did you want Bombay?
I knew nothing about it whatsoever, and I sort of put a lucky straw in, kind of thing.
And what had been your first impressions of India?
It really was the size of it, I think. The train journey from Bombay to Roorkee took 3 days, and we seemed to be going on forever. Roorkee was a lovely place. It had this tremendous canal, which at the time I knew nothing about, but since then I've learnt a lot about it, of course. When it was built in the 50s, 1850s, it was quite the largest canal in the world, and it flew with tremendous speed, and it was a tremendous size. It had marvellous engineering facets. There was a tremendous aqueduct taking it over a local river. The headworks were very impressive, and there was very good fishing in it.
What happened to you at Roque?
I'm sorry.
What happened to you at Roque?
Well, at Roque, I was put in Archie Jack's company, I felt very lonely at first at Roque because I hadn't, you know, I didn't come from an army family. I didn't know how to look after myself my first year, and I got prickly heat, and everything seemed to go wrong. My family had sent me out a dog from home, and the dog died when he arrived, and everything went wrong.
What should you have done to have avoided getting prickly heat?
More sensible. I tended to spend the afternoon in the hot weather sleeping, and you woke up in a pool of sweat, and there were no refrigerators or anything like that. You only kept the heat down by fans, and the temperature never went below 100 at night. The second year, I never had prickly heat again. I discovered that I must sort of shower more often, you know, and not allow myself to get covered in sweat and do nothing about it.
Which company were you in under Archie Jack?
I was in 43 Divisional Headquarter Company. We were the only two officers, and it was a pretty idle life, actually. I don't think we worked very hard. Roque was such a lovely place. There was lovely country all around it. And you got one, we were horsed, of course. And so you could ride your horse around this country. There was marvellous shooting and fishing all round it, and plenty to do, even though it was only sappers.
Is this in Bihar?
No, it's about 100 miles northeast of Delhi. It's just below the foothills. We got marvellous views of the Himalayas, but it was about 40 miles from Dehradun, which was up in the hills. And Dehradun had a lovely climate, where we had a dreadful one.
What was the work supposed to be at Roque?
Well, it was the headquarters of the Bengal Sappers, and there was a training battalion, and the recruits were all taught field engineering, sort of bridging, field works, everything. And when they were posted to the companies. But I can't remember really doing any engineering the 12 months or so I was at Roque. We paraded a bit, and we did exercises on the canal. We used the canal for wet bridging exercises. But it was very half-hearted. And I remember when war was declared in September, Archie, who was a very keen soldier, said we must mobilize. And so we went and got out our mobilized instructions. And quite without any orders or anything, we tried to do what the mobilization instructions said. But it was for war against Afghanistan. It wasn't real at all. And after a month or two, where nothing seemed to be happening, we sort of unmobilized.
Can you tell me something about the soldiers you had under you in this unit, please?
Oh, they were marvellous people. I've got a tremendous respect for the Indian Jawan. We had Muslims, Sikhs and Hindus. On the whole, the Sikhs tended to be the best. The Hindus weren't quite so good. But the Muslims were very nearly as good as the Sikhs. They all came from the Punjab, and they made marvelous soldiers.
Why weren't the Hindus quite as good?
They were. They came from the United Provinces. And they're not quite as martial, shall I say, as the Sikhs and Muslims. You rather had to keep an eye on the Sikhs because they were so good that they got into troubles, and they wanted plenty of competition to get the best out of them.
What kind of trouble did they get into?
Well, one of the troubles that I can remember with Sikhs is that there were more men than women in the Sikh community, which is unusual. And as a result, not all the brothers in a family could marry. So you could very easily find rather unfortunate sort of homosexual problems.
How did that interfere with the soldiering?
It upset the unit. I know nowadays the sort of thinking is that it doesn't, but it did in those days.
You mean soldiers objecting to having homosexual passes made of them?
It didn't make for a good community living somehow.
And when you say that the Hindus were not quite as martial, do you mean that this affected their skills as engineers or their soldierliness?
No, they were quite as they were just as good engineers as all the others. I mean, there was nothing between any of them in that thing, but they hadn't quite got the same martial outlook as the Muslims who came from the northwest of the Punjab did. Sort of down country India, people aren't quite as alert have soldierly qualities as sort of northwesterly India did.
Any memories about Archie Jack?
I don't think Archie Jack approved of me as a young subaltern. He was a tremendous character, very firm opinions, highly respected by everyone. The company thought the world of him, and he knew exactly what he was doing, he'd been senior under officer at Woolwich, and I believe he carried out a marvellous sort of rag exercise there, and had been reduced to the ranks because of it, but it was terribly military. He should have become a general without any doubt.
What kind of strong opinions came across to you at Roorkee?
I think when war broke out, I think he foresaw what was going to happen. And he tried to get away from India. He wanted to get into the thick of it. And I've heard since, though how true it is, I don't know, that he'd sort of tried to arrange a transfer of commission to the Scots Guards.